I want to pray, and then I want to jump into the message. Lord, I thank you just how much the simplest of things can mean to somebody. Lord, I pray that your simple truth today, God, that you are holy and that we are broken, but you have healed us, will speak to the students today, Lord. God, just walk with us and be with us. Amen. So we've been talking in this series, Living Proof, and from 1 Timothy 4:12, but don't let anyone look down on you because you're young. And we talked about speech last time, last year, and now we're on this of character and conduct. Bob talked about the Proverbs 31 woman and the man of excellence last week, and then Eric talked about Job and what's it look like to have character in crisis. And today, I'm talking about what I want to call standing amongst the crowd. Standing amongst the crowd, which is really character amongst the crowd. And we're going to be talking about the man Isaiah. But sometimes what I think the idea we get and sometimes what it feels like is sort of what this video we're going to start off in a second. And that video is of Tiananmen Square. And this is over in China. And this is a little while back in the 80s. And the People's Republic of China was oppressing the people. And so there was a group of people that wanted to stand up to them. And this is what that video is like. That just goes on. That goes on for a couple more minutes, actually. The same thing. The guy gets back down, and then he goes over again, and he continues to stand in front of that tank. The reason I wanted to show that video is because, one, I don't think you understand the gravity of that. I mean, literally, that one person was able to stop that whole line of tanks by being the one person that stood. But I think that's what you guys feel like sometimes. As you're in the world, you feel like, am I the only person that's trying to stand for Christ? You feel like the world is those tanks that just want to ride over you for the beliefs that you have. And so I think today we're gonna look at what is it like to stand amongst the crowd, to stand amongst the world. And I think it's going to be a little bit like you thought it was as we look at Isaiah's life, but I think it's going to be different than you thought. But as I was thinking about it, I was like, man, I know I'm a little kind of in y'all's generation, and we love standing for causes, right? We love standing for causes. You guys, does anybody remember Occupy Wall Street? Who remembers that? It might be a little bit before your time, but if you go over to the next slide, they were all about, we're the 99%, and there's the 1% that's taking all of our money. They were willing to go and camp and live in New York City because they were standing for the cause that Wall Street is taking all the money and not doing good things with it. We stand for the cause of sex trafficking. We actually, last summer, we had a woman come speak here that was in sex trafficking and was able to come out. We stand for that cause because we're passionate about it. We don't want to see people hurt like that. There's the cause of Tom's Shoes. How many of you even know what Tom's Shoes are all about? The whole point was that, you buy this pair of shoes and they're able to donate another pair of shoes to people in Africa and different places that don't have shoes. We stand behind that cause because it's sweet. It's cool. We know we're doing something. And then one that hits a little bit more at home would be this one. Keep calm and let's close Fairfax County Public Schools. Yes, you guys did hit the top Twitter feed with hashtag close Fairfax County Public Schools, but you are passionate about it, so passionate that you had one of the top Twitter tweets at that day. That's crazy because we get behind causes. We like being behind causes. We're passionate about it. But the man I want to tell you about today is the man Isaiah. You can go to that book in the Old Testament, the man Isaiah, find that Isaiah. He's a prophet. He was a prophet in the Old Testament. So what's that mean? It means that he's going to foretell things that God tells him. He's gonna have prophecy. He's going to tell them what's going to happen in their country, what's going to happen to them. I mean, it's crazy that Isaiah was actually a prophet for 60 years. That was his lifelong job, to be a prophet. He did two things. He spoke out against the sin of the Jewish nation, of Israel. He spoke out against them, but he also spoke out against other nations. And he foreshadows, it's really cool, he foreshadows the coming of Christ. So he really talks about the coming of Christ. He's actually called the Prince of the Prophets because of the words that he used and how he did it for so long. Some say he may have prophesied for as long as 64 years. And I'm going to tell you what, this guy was serious about his prophetic job. He actually named one of his sons, I can't really totally say it, but it means a remnant will return. Because in the end, Isaiah, he goes and he prophesies that the Jews will be taken over by Babylon. So he actually names one of his sons, a remnant will return. And he names his second son, speed the spoil, hasten the prey. I mean, this guy was serious about his job as a prophet. And the names were symbolic and they served as warnings against Israel. So open up to chapter 6 as we look at this guy, Isaiah. Open up to chapter 6 as we look at him and how he stands amongst the crowd. You know, a lot of times, what we think of standing amongst a crowd, of standing up for Christian beliefs, we think of things like protesting, like going to our graduation and sharing the gospel. We get really big ideas of what standing is. And I hope today that you realize that standing amongst the crowd, having character in the midst of the world as you go against the flow. And I actually love the way this thing works because that's really what it's all about. Look at all those people are going one way. And there's the one guy in the middle that's living proof because he's standing against the flow. He's standing against the crowd. So open up to chapter 6. And we're going to read a little bit starting in verse 1. And I'm sorry, I don't have this on the screen. So I'm going to say you have your phone busted out. I really want you to read along. Isaiah chapter 6. We're starting in verse 1. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord seated on a throne, high and exalted, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him were seraph, each with 6 wings, with 2 wings that covered their faces, with 2 they covered their feet, and with 2 they were flying. And they were calling to one another, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory." At the sound of their voices, the doorposts and thresholds shook, and the temple was filled with smoke. "Woe to me," I cried, "I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips. And my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty." Then one of the seraphs flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. With it he touched my mouth and said, "See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away, and your sin atoned for." And then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?" And I said, "Here I am, send me." He said, "Go and tell this people." Now, what we don't know from this verse, from just reading that, is that for 52 years, this king, King Uzziah, he had reigned and he brought much comfort and he brought much material blessing to the nation of Israel. So they had subdued the surrounding areas. I mean, this time it's all fighting. It's all wars. They're always fighting. So during this 52-year reign, the nation of Israel was really comfortable. Things were good, and all was well. And then, where we pick up in chapter 6, King Uzziah died. King Uzziah died. You know, Isaiah, he knows that the reign of King Uzziah was great. He knows that there was a lot of comfort, there was a lot of blessing. But then Isaiah comes to this place in his life, and it's like, well, now what? What's next? He comes to this fork in the road. Things have always been good, but now this king who had really subdued everyone had made it comfortable for me. I'm at this fork in the road. What do I do? And so what do we see Isaiah do? And it's cool. It kind of goes along with what Eric Smith talked about with Job, this character in crisis. Because what did Job do? What does Isaiah do? He goes to the temple to seek God. King Uzziah dies. He doesn't know what to do. So what's the first thing? He's like, what do? I got to go to the temple. I need to seek God. I need to hear from God. That was his character in crisis. That's the first way he showed that he had character in crisis, that he had character amongst the crowd, because he went to God. He said, I know I won't know how to do this on my own wisdom, my own guidance, my own intellect. It won't direct me right, but I'll go to the temple and I'll seek God. So then Isaiah, he has this vision. What's the first thing that he sees is, it says in verse 1, I saw the Lord seated on a throne, high and exalted, and the train of his robe filled the temple. The first thing that Isaiah sees in this vision, God is still ruling. God is still ruling. a lot of times we think when things happen to us that are bad or the world around us seems to start crumbling, ISIS comes along, all these different things, we think God's not ruling anymore. God's not in control anymore. And that's where Isaiah was. King Uzziah died, this great king that had made everything comfortable, that all the blessings were there. He dies, and Isaiah, he sees God is still on the throne. God is still ruling. And he trusts in that. He trusts that God is in control, God is sovereign, and God is ruling. And then in verse 3, we see, he says, and they, the seraphs, these winged creatures up there that really proclaim the holiness of God, they were calling to one another, and here's what they were saying: holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is filled with his glory. Now, I think we read that and it's simple, like, well, yeah, there's seraphs, they're up in heaven, they're going to be proclaiming God's holiness. But as Isaiah sees this, here's what he really sees. I think Isaiah, for the first time in his life, he really gets a glimpse of how holy God is. He gets this real glimpse of these seraphs up there. They're claiming, God, you are holy, holy, holy. And he gets this glimpse of how holy God is. And here's what happens. Here's what happens in the midst of this vision. As he sees the holiness of God, what happens to him? He sees the holiness of God, and what does that reveal? It reveals his brokenness. For Isaiah, it reveals to him that he's not all that he thought he was. He doesn't have it all together like he thought. And just simply, I think Isaiah really, in some ways, they say he was probably in royalty in some way. Not a king, but he was related to some kings and those in control. So I wouldn't say he had a hard life. But when he sees the holiness of God, it sends him to his knees and he says, I'm broken. I'm not whole. I'm missing something. I need something. When I see God's glory, I realize what I'm missing because of how holy God is. Then in verse 6 and 7, it says, then one of the seraphs, he cries out in verse 5, woe to me, I cried, I'm ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips. My eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty. See, when we really see how holy God is, how great he is, how almighty he is, when we really get that in our mind and we see that for the first time, we realize, man, I am unclean and those around me are unclean. We don't have it all together like we thought. And then in verses 6-7, then one of the seraphs flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. With it, he touched my mouth and said, see, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin is atoned for. So see, Isaiah is on the path for God to send him out and to be the prophet. But before he could be sent out, he had to be changed. He had to be transformed. Something different had to happen to him. And what was that? That was these seraphs coming over and touching his lips with this hot coal. And what was that saying? You are healed. You are healed of your sins. There was a spiritual change in him. It was a defining moment in his life. He was changed. He was spiritually changed. He was transformed. Now, I think a lot of us, and when I first read this, I'm like, that has not happened to me. A seraph, this winged creature, has not come and touched my lip with a coal. But I think for you guys, what are some of these ways? Summer camp. Summer camp, when you get away from everything, when you get away from the technology, when you get away from your phone and all these different things, you hear from God. God transform you. Maybe winter camp. Maybe in this winter camp, you saw God's holiness. You saw that you don't need to fear. God is sovereign. He's in control. You don't need to fear. The only thing you need to fear is God. Maybe it was a shepherd group. Maybe it was one Wednesday night at a shepherd group. God just spoke to you and you were transformed. You realized, you know what, God, you are so holy and I'm unclean, but you can heal me. That's what Isaiah saw. And then in verse 8, it says, then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and who will go for us? And I said, here I am, send me. So God asked him, who will go for us? He's talking about the Trinity there, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. He's saying, who will go for us? Who will be the human that is willing to be the one to stand amongst the crowd and tell them about us, how holy we are, but how we want to redeem the people. That's what he asked Isaiah. And this verse is usually a missions verse. We usually use this for missions. We say, well, who will go? Who will go on the mission trips? But it's interesting for Isaiah, for him, it was a right here, right now. It wasn't like who in a couple years will go or who will sign up for this mission trip. All those are great. But for Isaiah, it was right here, right now. Who will stand amongst the crowd for me? Who will be living proof for me? But God, remember this, God didn't ask him to go until he was prepared. God doesn't ask us to go and not prepare us. God doesn't say go. He says, no, go because I've healed you, because I am with you, because I walk with you, because I live inside of you. God had changed him from the inside first, and then he could go out and he could reach the outside. He could stand amongst the crowd. Isaiah was just a man. Isaiah was just a man like all of us. He was just a human, but he was transformed by God. And then in verse 9, he says, God said, go and tell this people. And he goes on and he says, look, he says, here's the message that you have for them. You have eyes to see, you have ears to hear, you have your brains to think. And go tell the nation of Israel, that you have all these things, but you're not using them to see that I am holy, to hear my word, and to perceive in your hearts how you should really be living, that they are living unholy lives. But then God continues on, and he tells them that, he tells Isaiah to go tell them, you know what, you will be destroyed. The whole nation of Israel will be destroyed. That's a tough message that he calls them to go out and tell them, to tell them that everything they're doing is wrong, that they will be destroyed. But he says that God has a plan of redemption, and that redemption is Jesus Christ. If you look at verse 13, he says, and though a tenth remains in the land, it will again be laid to waste. But as the terebinth and the oak leave stumps when they are cut down, see, the holy seed will be a stump in the land. And that is Jesus. Jesus is the plan of redemption for them. So he gives Isaiah a hard message to tell, but he says, there is hope. That hope is Jesus Christ. So you're like, Lee, you're talking about standing amongst the crowd today. We watched this video, the Tiananmen Square, and we're talking about all these different causes. Why does this matter? Why does this whole call of Isaiah, why does it matter? It is the call of Isaiah, the preparation for him, was the most important thing for him to go out and be the prophet that God had called him to be. Why is this? Because God has called us to stand in the gap to bring others to Christ. When we stand amongst the crowd for Christ, and I'm going to get into more of that, what that looks like. When we stand amongst the crowd, we aren't doing it because we want to judge people. We aren't doing it because we want to say, look how holy we are. The whole purpose of us standing amongst the crowd is to bring people to Christ. But see, the thing is, Isaiah would have never really gotten that if God just said, go be a prophet. He would have gone out, he would have told him the same message. But because God had first changed his heart, God had showed him how holy he was and how unholy Isaiah was, because he saw God's holiness. We have to grasp that. We have to grasp that internal change, that God has transformed us because he has transformed us, and we see how holy he is and how broken we are, and yet he wants to heal us. That's why we stand against the crowd. That's why we stand up for Christ. I think sometimes we get it wrong. We look at some of the examples like Westboro Baptist. You may or may not have heard of them. They're the ones that they go to soldiers' funerals, and they say signs up that they're going to hell because they kill people. They go to rallies for homosexual rallies, and they'll say things like gays are fags. That's what we think is standing up. But they're not getting it. They're not seeing that we see the holiness of God. That changes us, and we go and we stand against the crowd. We love on people because we want to see them be drawn to Christ. We want to see them be drawn to Christ so they can be transformed like us. But when we forget that, when we forget how God has transformed us and changed us into his image, when we forget that, we go out and we stand up for things. We stand up for causes. But we forget what it's really all about. And the whole point is to draw them back to Christ. That's what it's all about, to draw him back to Christ. I had lunch with a guy earlier this week. He's a leader in Young Life in this area, and he was telling me his testimony. It was really cool. He didn't really grow up in a Christian home, and it was like his 18th birthday. He'd come to know Christ, and God had totally transformed his life. But his whole high school, he had been in a party, and he'd been into doing all that kind of stuff. And his friends for his 18th birthday were going to throw him a real party, and so he goes to the party, and he goes there, and after a while, the beer starts coming out. And the different things that come out there. And he said, I knew I was really changed when I got up on a table in the midst of the party. And he said, guys, I can't do this. I have to go. This is an 18-year-old guy that stands up on the table in the midst of a party. That's standing up. But what was the whole point? It wasn't because he wanted to judge them. It wasn't because he wanted to condemn them. It was because Christ had transformed his life. And because they said, I have to stand up. I'm changed. I can't do what I used to do. But he wanted to see his friends come to know Christ. So that night he walked out of the party because God had transformed his life. So what's this look like for you? I think for some of you, it's been easy. Like Isaiah in the reign of King Uzziah. It was easy to be in the nation of Israel. There was comfort. There was blessing. It's been easy. Everyone around you takes care of you. In a lot of ways, you haven't needed to step up. But then there comes this defining moment in your life, and maybe it's over a series of times, not like one moment, but you look around you and you realize no one else is stepping up around you to go. You look around. You look in church, you look in school, you look on your teams, you look in your house, and you say, there's no one else standing to go. But God is calling you to go. You might look around and you might not look like anybody else is standing up, but God has called you to go, to stand up. I think some of you have had this experience when you looked around and realized no one else was standing up. Some of you have accepted it. I think some have denied it. Some of you have been going towards it. You're working towards it. And some of you right now might be in it. God right now is saying, you know I've called you to stand up amongst your friends. You know I've called you to stand up in this group. It's the call of God. And God's saying to you, will you be an ambassador for me? Will you be a lighthouse for me amongst your friends? Will you speak for me? And that's what he says to Isaiah. We looked around and we said, who will go for us? And Isaiah said, I will go. I can't think of a better example of this than Tim Tebow. I can't think of better than this. First of all, the guy's just got guns. He's a beast. But I think Tim Tebow's doing it right. I want to read some stuff that Tim Tebow said. So I think Tim Tebow's just an awesome example of standing amongst the crowd, but in the right way, because he's been transformed. He says, I'm no different than anyone else. Despite what people may think, because I'm a Gator, this is back when he was in college, he said, because I'm a Gator football player, Tim adds, through everything I do, and just by living, I want people, when they see me, to say, there's something different about that guy. And that's because he has a relationship with Jesus Christ. Tim, who began his walk with Christ as a six-year-old, according to BP Sports, says, I wanted to take this platform that I have, being a quarterback and being at the University of Florida, and use that to help people and to be that role model, that example for kids. That's the reason I think I've been blessed to have the success that I've had. You know, it's pretty easy for me to say the most important thing in my life is my relationship with Jesus Christ, followed by my relationship with my family and footballs later on down the line, he told Robin Roberts in an interview. Before a game, you know, I take off my helmet, I run over there, I spend a few moments with someone who is dealing with so much more than I ever had to deal with, and to love them and care about them, and in front of thousands and thousands of people, you know. Let them know that they're more important than all this, he told Roberts. And finally, Tebow has been criticized for his open display of faith by those who say it has no place on the football field. He's weathered criticisms before. He was teased as a child. Having a strong foundation at home helped, and it helps him to know that he stands for something that's bigger than football. See, Tim Tebow stands for the greatest cause there ever is. He stands for the greatest cause there ever is. Why do I love Tim Tebow? I don't think Tim Tebow is the greatest football player in the world. I agree with, if you know football, I agree with the commentators that he may not be the greatest quarterback. But Tim Tebow has decided, it's not about me. It's about Christ. I have been transformed because God has changed me and given me a real purpose and given me life and told me who I am. I take that onto the platform of football that he's given me to proclaim Jesus Christ. But what I love about Tim Tebow is he never draws the attention to himself. It's always about Christ. From that picture, there's so many pictures of him kneeling down. After games, he prays. Instead of going on the normal spring break to everyone, he goes to the Philippines to work there. It's not only an outward thing. It's not just like, yeah, I'm a Christian. I wear these Bible verses under my eyes. It's a real deal to him. He is changed. He is a changed man that lives it out. And honestly, Tim Tebow is one of my heroes. I love Tim Tebow. But it's because Christ has changed him. But after saying all that, I do want you to look at this picture. Tim Tebow is not Jesus. All right? Tim Tebow is not Jesus. But he knows Jesus. And that's what has changed him. So, sorry. I made it kind of funny there. So standing against the flow, standing amongst the crowd, let's get a little more practical. We've learned the call. We've learned why. What's the purpose? I have to see how holy God is. When I see how holy God is, I will be changed. I will be transformed. So why is it hard? I think one of the first things, the reason it's hard for you guys and for us as adults to stand amongst the crowd is the fear of man. The fear of man is great. You know, at the core, we don't trust that what God says is enough. We don't trust that God is enough for me. We have to have the accolades of man. We have to have the acceptance of man. We fear because we don't have the right fear of God. And that's what Jamie talked about at Winter Retreat. The only fear that we should have is the fear of God. If we don't stand up for God, how does God think? We should fear him alone, not man. It's hard because we fear being lonely. We fear that we'll have no one with us. We all need friends. Don't get me wrong with that. God has made us for a relationship. But we so fear that, what will my friends think of me? What will happen? I'll be alone. We really think sometimes we can't stand amongst the crowd because rejection will be too much. I won't be able to handle the rejection. I know one for me, I don't stand amongst the crowd because the comfort's too appealing. I like my comfort. I like my nice life. I like it when, you know, people think well of me all the time. I can't leave my comfort. The fear of man is that we are seeking happiness and our identity in others instead of Christ. There is no way Isaiah could have gone and done what he did for 64 years if his identity wasn't in Christ, if he didn't believe that God had called him and God had transformed him. There's no way he could have done that. We have the fear of man that we need fulfillment from others. We need to get our fulfillment, who we are. We need the praise of others so much we can't stand amongst the crowd. So the first thing is hard to stand amongst crowds because we have the fear of man. But what do we take that back to? What do we do with that? What do we do with that fear? We take that back to God and we say, God, I want to see how holy you are. Will you show me? Will you show me? God's going to honor that. He's going to say, yeah, I want to show you how holy you are. Because when you realize that you're broken, it then changes you that you are healed and you can't help but tell that to others because you have been healed. Second reason it's hard is because there's a hard message to bring sometimes. It's a hard message to bring to people to tell them that you're a sinner and you need God's grace. As people, we are self-sufficient, especially as Americans. We love being self-sufficient. That's a hard message to bring. And Isaiah was bringing a message that, you know what? At some point, Israel, you'll be captured by Babylon. Who wants to bring that message? Who would want to be the person that would go before America and say, one day we will all be destroyed? Who would want to bring that message? That's a hard message to bring. And he goes to the people of Israel and he says to them, you're blind and you're deaf. You're like a human. You're like a fading flower. You're like the darkness. That's a hard message to bring. That's what God called him to bring. And we do have a hard message to bring. That message that, you know, we are sinners, that we are broken. That's hard for people to hear. But there's a hope, and that hope is found in God. And that's where he goes. And you can write down Isaiah 54 and 55. He says that there is hope and found in God. And now we know that Jesus said, come to me, all you who are weary, and cast your burden on me. And also in chapter 56, Isaiah brings this message of hope that says, God is not for a select few. He's not just for one nation. Follow God and he will bring you into the fold. That's simply John 3:16. For God so loved the world, not just America, not just those that would accept him, but he loved the whole world, that whoever believes in him will have everlasting life. So we bring a message that's hard, but we also bring a message of hope. I think the other reason it's hard to stand against the flow is we have this thought like Moses had. Well, God will send somebody else, right? We think it's okay if I don't really step up in my school, if whatever it is, if I don't really stand against the flow, God will send somebody else. That's what Moses did. Moses said, look, I'm not a good speaker. God sends somebody else. But God kept on working and saying, no, I've chosen you. I just got a couple things to think about. Some what ifs. What if the U.S. didn't stand up against Hitler and Japan? What if the signers of the Declaration of Independence were too scared? What if Abraham Lincoln didn't trust God enough to give the Emancipation Proclamation? What if Schindler didn't stand up to the Nazis and foster many, many Jews? What if Martin Luther King didn't decide to stand up for equal rights of all Americans? What if those on flight 93 did not fight for control of the plane and crash it in a field in Pennsylvania? And then what if for us, what if we don't stand in the gap that God has for us, wherever that gap is? What if we don't stand that? And really, I want to rebuke the thought that says, you know what, somebody else will do it. Is God sovereign? Yeah. Is God in control? Yeah. But what does he say to Isaiah? He says, who will go for me? And that's what he's saying to all of us. Who will go? Who will stand in the gap? Who will stand amongst the crowd to tell them the hard message, but the message that I want to redeem them. I want to love them. Who will go? So what now? What now? Each of you in this room, I know God has a gap for you to stand in. God has someone for you to stand against the crowd. What about your job? What about working hard when it's cool to slack off, when everybody slacks off? What about your job that you work hard? Is that a gap you could stand in? What about school? Trusting in God that he'll get you to the right college instead of being like everyone else and running around frantically, but trusting that God will get you there. What about leading a Bible study or a prayer time before school starts? What about talking to your friends about what Jesus means to you? What about at home? You may be the only view of Christ that your family sees. What about taking interest in your brother or sister when nobody else does that? What about on the school bus, taking up the cause for the guy or the girl who gets made fun of all the time? What about in your group of friends, stepping away from the conversation when it turns wrong, or going out of your way to serve somebody? It's not really cool to go out of your way to serve somebody. But that's what God calls us to do, to stand in that gap. What about with your dress? Were you dressed modestly? Because that's definitely going against the flow. What about in your team? What about if you're the person that doesn't go to all the parties? What if you're the one that doesn't bash the coach when he's not in the locker room? What if you're the one that decided, you know what, I'll pick up all the balls after practice? What if you don't use your status to make yourself look better, to be higher, but instead you serve others? What if simply like at a sleepover with your friends? I've been there. I know what happens in sleepovers. Will you stand up there? What about within your Christian friends? What if you take the word of God seriously within your Christian friends with a heart that wants to see your friends grow intimately with God? I think it's easy sometimes when we get around our Christian friends, we get comfortable. And we would actually do things within our Christian friends that we would never do in the world. And I know there's some in this room that feel lonely because you feel like you're the only one standing because you're taking your relationship with God seriously. I want to encourage you that you're standing because you've seen God's holiness. And you know, there would be times when you have to stand alone. Sometimes we're called to stand alone. I think that's what Isaiah did a lot. He had to stand alone. Others will come, though. Others will come beside you. What about in the world? You know, for some of you, God may have called you to stand in the area of politics. Some of you in the area of being a social worker. For some of you to stand in the arena of fashion. And some of you to be missionaries, and the list goes on. But the question is, will you be the one to stand? But there's one thing you have to remember, and this is the one statement I want you to leave with today. I stand in the gap to bring others to Christ. We don't want you to leave here saying from the word that Isaiah just had to go and he had to cast judgment on people and he had to tell them what it's all about. No, Isaiah first saw the holiness of God, which showed his brokenness, which in turn he wanted to go out and tell others. Because if we're not transformed by God, if we're not changed, we're just a bunch of judgmental people. We're a bunch of hypocrites. But God has changed us. So I want you to think back to that video of the Tiananmen Square, of the one person. They decided, if no one else will stand, I'll do it. I'll do it. And that question is, will you? For some of you, I'm sorry, the sheets got messed up, but it should be on the screen. There's really three areas of where you are. The first one is, my view of God's holiness is off, and so I don't see my brokenness. I don't see that I need to be healed. The second one is, you feel the call to stand, but you're scared. And the third is, you're standing alone.